This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to a breaking news edition of Pollock and Thurston. The bat signal went out some 20 minutes ago. Brandon has answered, and here we are on a Friday at noon Eastern time, not to preview the Bills Broncos this weekend, but instead to talk about an SEC announcement. Whenever you see those letters in your inbox, Brandon.
Southeastern Championship.
That's it. That's it. In the spirit of Joe Blanchard, we are holding a breaking news edition of the show today.
That'll be Southwest.
Yes. To talk about the ruling that has been made by the Securities and Exchange Commission regarding one Vince McMahon. And we will go right to the release that they put out earlier today that the Securities and Exchange Commission today announced settled charges against Vince McMahon, the former executive chairman and CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, Inc., for signing two settlement agreements, one in 2019, one in 2022, on behalf of himself and WWE, without disclosing the agreements to WWE's board of directors, legal department, accountants, financial reporting personnel, or auditor. Doing so circumvented WWE's system of internal accounting controls and caused material misstatements in WWE's 2018 and 2021 financial statements. According to the order, one settlement agreement obligated McMahon to pay a former employee $3 million in exchange for the former employee's agreement to not disclose her relationship with McMahon. This is the agreement we assume is related to Janelle Grant. Of potential claims against WWE and McMahon. The second agreement obligated McMahon to pay a former WWE independent contractor $7.5 million in exchange for the independent contractor's agreement to not disclose her allegations against McMahon and her release of potential claims against WWE and McMahon. The order finds that because McMahon failed to disclose the agreements to WWE, that the company did not evaluate the disclosure implications or the appropriate accounting for these transactions in its financial statements. The SEC's order finds that because the payments required by the 2019 and 2022 agreements were not recorded, WWE overstated its 2018 net income by approximately 8% and its 2021 net income by approximately 1.7%. The order finds that McMahon signed management representation letters that were provided to WWE's auditor that did not disclose the existence of either settlement agreement. After learning of the settlement agreements, WWE issued a restatement of its financial statements in August of 2022. What does this all amount to? Well, without admitting or denying the SEC findings, McMahon agreed to cease and desist from violating those provisions. He will pay a $400,000 civil penalty and reimburse WWE for $1,330,915.90 pursuant to Section 304A of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act that I'm going to guess a decent percentage chance Brandon Thurston has read at least a portion of. There we have it, Brandon. $400,000 fine, and we have on the record statements from both Vince McMahon and Ann Callis.
Yes. Yes. Do we want to read those now? We also have a comment from the SEC Associate Regional Director in New York, who said company executives cannot enter into material agreements on behalf of the company they serve and withhold that information from the company's control functions and auditor. So if it's not clear, what's being got at here is that Vince made these NDA agreements and then did not, and nobody really knew about them in the company other than himself, maybe Jerry McDivitt, his lawyer, maybe a few others, but this was not disclosed to the SEC. Kind of underscores the notion that if W had not been a publicly traded company, perhaps a lot of this information that's come to light over the last couple of years would never come to light if it was a privately held company. But it did, because there's a lot of money involved, a material amount. Material in this context means it's enough money that investors should have known about it so that they could more properly evaluate the value of WWE. 8% of your net income is pretty material.
Do you make heads or tails of why it is just these two specific agreements when we know that there were other agreements in place as well that went beyond just the $7.5 and $3 million ones? Or is that still a lingering question, maybe?
So when the Wall Street Journal broke this story in summer of 2022, eventually they broke that there were four NDAs that McMahon made with four different women who he employed. Two of them are referred to here in the SEC's press release. There are an additional two, which were for $1 million each with former WWE employees in 2006 and 2008. I don't know why those aren't being dealt with here as well. Maybe it's just the fact that they were for less money. And the Grant NDA was for $3 million. The $7.5 million NDA with a former WWE talent, that was for $7.5 million. So these are greater sums, the ones that are being dealt with today. And they are more recent. Those NDAs, the one with Grant was made in 2022. And the other NDA, although the allegations are from 2005, that agreement nonetheless was made in either 2018 or 2019.
Yeah. And the one for $7.5 million, while the identity of that person is not revealed, it is the allegation we know of that was included in the New York Times reporting was this was among the,
yeah.
The Wall Street Journal, my mistake, was coercion for oral sex was one of the allegations regarding that particular individual. So Vince McMahon issued a comment today stating, quote, "The case is closed. Today ends nearly 3 years of investigation by different governmental agencies. There has been a great deal of speculation about what exactly the government was investigating and what the outcome would be. As today's resolution shows, much of that speculation was misguided and misleading. In the end, there was never anything more to this than minor accounting errors with regard to some personal payments that I made several years ago while I was CEO of WWE. I'm thrilled that I can now put all of this behind me." That is a reaction to this statement.
I'm sure he's thrilled today.
I think he is. I mean, at the bare minimum here, and we will talk about the aspect, like, this has been a prolonged investigation into Vince McMahon and whether or not that they were also investigating the sex trafficking aspect to all of this as well. It would appear that today, if you had any notion that Vince McMahon might be facing federal charges or even like potential prison time, that seems to be pretty much squashed at this point. That moving forward, this is a civil matter involving Chynelle Grant against Vince McMahon. That seems to be the primary focus of Vince McMahon from a legal standpoint.
Probably. So we knew that the SEC was investigating, and that had been mentioned in Wall Street Journal reporting around 2022 and so forth. But also it was reported by the Wall Street Journal pretty specifically in February of last year, just under a year ago, that he was under investigation from the Southern District of New York for potential criminal charges, which have never been filed, but for potential criminal charges related to allegations against him of sexual misconduct, of sex trafficking and sexual assault. You can read his statement a number of ways. I still see no reason to believe that there was never any investigation. I did reach out to Southern District of New York. They declined to comment. Their investigations tend to be very secretive. They will not make a comment to say, no, this case is closed or something of that nature, things of that nature today. But there's, and clearly we have a comment that leads us to the comment from Ann Callis, where she's insisting that, and she's the lawyer for Janelle Grant, she's insisting that this investigation is continuing.
This is the statement that literally just came down the wire from Ann Callis. During his time leading WWE, Vince McMahon acted as if rules did not apply to him, and now we have confirmation that he repeatedly broke the law to cover up his horrifying behavior, including human trafficking. The SEC's charges prove that the NDA Vince McMahon coerced Ms. Grant into signing violates the law, and therefore her case must be heard in court. While prosecutors for the Southern District of New York continue their criminal investigation, we look forward to bringing forward new evidence in our civil case about the sexual exploitation Ms. Grant endured at WWE by Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. So I interpret this statement, Brandon, and share your thoughts too. I mean, there's the strong emphasis I take from this that based on this ruling, it's an acknowledgement that these that there was a violation. Vince McMahon is paying a fine for it. He is also reimbursing WWE over it. Therefore, these agreements are essentially,
have we mentioned that even like that there is a penalty here? On the Vince McMahon scale, it is pretty light that he's going to pay a $400,000 fine.
Yes.
And he's going to pay $1.3 million to WWE. So, you know, they're hard up for money these days too, I'm sure. But you know, Vince McMahon has liquidated more than $1 billion in stock over the last couple of years. So he's probably well funded.
You don't think this will be put on a payment plan?
You never know. These NDAs were on a payment plan.
Yeah. They could be. I mean, maybe you spread out this $400,000.
I believe he has also paid for the investigations that W's board did and so forth.
Yes.
So this has cost him several million dollars.
I mean, this entire thing has been exceptionally costly, much more beyond a monetary figure, I would say, for Vince McMahon. But getting specific to this, I think this is going to be ammunition for the Callis argument that these NDAs should not be adhered to in terms of the venue that they should be sought out in. This is a clear evidence that this should be tried in court, not in arbitration, which has always been the key to Janelle Grant's side of having this, of having that venue of civil court as opposed to behind closed doors.
And I followed up with Janelle Grant's representatives to provide some clarification for how this would support a legal argument, which is the issue at hand right now in Janelle Grant's civil lawsuit against Vince, John Laurinaitis, and WWE is that this NDA that Grant and McMahon signed does contain an arbitration clause, which I feel like we should remind people more about what arbitration is. Arbitration is kind of like a lawsuit, but not really. It's in private. So no precedents can be set. Some would argue that it favors the wealthier party. And there's not a lot of transparency here, but Janelle Grant nonetheless decided to sue him in public court. And the issue that they're litigating now is that the defendants are all arguing that this should go to arbitration because there's an arbitration clause here. And Grant is raising arguments against that, including that there are public policies. There are federal laws that should apply to her case. I don't know how this would support her argument, but maybe we'll see. Of course, we know, less than a week from now, we're expecting Grant's lawsuit to be amended. She's going to change her arguments somewhat. We don't know what that means or what that will entail, but we're expecting that by next Wednesday, by January 15th, according to an earlier filing in the case. I guess I want to clarify too, there when we reported that a week or so ago that she's going to amend her complaint, I saw a lot of reaction to that report as if it was good news for Vince. I don't see this as good news for Vince. It just means that she is going to make some sort of additional legal argument here.
That's kind of indicated in the statement here about bringing forward new evidence. I'm sure that would be reflected in an amended complaint. And I don't think you can read it one way or the other because we don't know what this amended complaint is going to look like other than it is going to be filed by Ann Callis's side. Like, I don't think this is going to be something that is of beneficial value to Vince McMahon.
And generally, it's my understanding in federal lawsuits that you're allowed, that the plaintiff is allowed to amend their complaint one time without even needing the judge's approval. We've seen that already. In fact, in the Cody Rhodes, Wesley Eisholdt, where he's actually, Wesley Eisholdt has amended his complaint more than once, I believe, in any case. So we're expecting that. And it could mean, you know, I've raised the question, are there going to be named defendants added to this, such as possibly Dr. Carlin Kolker, who is the doctor that Vince McMahon sent Janelle Grant to go get treatment at, is that something that could happen? I don't know. They haven't answered that question, but we'll see perhaps by Wednesday. Maybe there'll be different arguments that are made about why this should go to arbitration. Maybe the news has broken since January 25 of last year that they're going to reference in their legal argument about why this should avoid arbitration, but we'll see.
There's also the inference of Vince McMahon potentially pursuing like a defamation case in all of this as well. It becomes a interesting part of the calculus here. If you are Vince McMahon, like, what is your roadmap? And to have this arbitration case taking place in private, and then if a defamation case, like, that will be a very public case. And like, I'm constantly trying to look at, like, we know what the end goal is for Vince McMahon, and that is to restore enough capital that he can resume businesses, that he can be welcomed back into that world. It's how you get there if you are Vince McMahon that is what we're in the midst of how they get there. And if arbitration expedites that process, or does it make for any difference? Because here is someone that is about to turn 80 years old. You do have to be wondering, like, what is the calculus here of Vince McMahon and his representation and the amount of time that is going to be dedicated to this before he can kind of unpause his career that has been on pause for the last year.
There's a PW Insider report from a few months ago saying that he's looking to start a media company, and some of his top executives that he used to work with in WWE, who are no longer with WWE, including Brad Blum, might be coming over to work with him. But we've got no news on that beyond the initial report. Given the new number of allegations, and to be clear, there's a number of allegations against Vince. They're not few. There are what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different women over a long course of time have accused Vince McMahon of sexual misconduct of one form or another. There's another one that was involved in this news about various allegations that also just involved John Laurinaitis. So there's a lot there that might make people hesitant to work with him if he's trying to start a new company. This is why he resigned from TKO, of course.
If you look back at the option to have the stay that was instilled back 6 months ago, 7 months ago now, because it expired back in December. Do you think that was do you think that negatively impacted Janelle Grant's case? Do you think it was kind of just a wash? Do you think it had a big impact? Like, how are you feeling today if you are the Janelle Grant side in all of this? And it would appear like the federal aspect to this case seems to be over unless something unforeseen comes.
Yeah, I guess, and let's get into like what I think is likely at this point. The notion, I believe it's likely that Vince McMahon was investigated for sexual assault and sex trafficking by SDNY. We're now at a point where it looks pretty unlikely that he's going to be indicted, charged with crimes at this point. As you mentioned, about 7 months ago, the civil lawsuit that Janelle Grant filed was put on hold. So at the request of these U.S. attorneys who are presumably investigating him for potential crimes. And at that point, you got people have to understand too that federal investigations of this nature are very secretive. And Grant's side just may not have had much information beyond that there was an investigation. They may not have known exactly what the details of what their investigation consisted of. Presumably you would think that they're going to, then the reason why this federal lawsuit was put on hold is because they were going to try to obtain all sorts of evidence. It might have led to a criminal indictment against McMahon. I don't know that they would know a lot that would be meaningful beyond that. So you can understand why they would agree at the request of federal prosecutors to put the lawsuit on hold. And they did for 6 months. December 11th, that expired. And that's over. And there's been no indictment. And again, at this point, it seems rather unlikely that there's going to be an indictment. You never know. And perhaps new evidence could always come to light that could cause investigators to continue to pursue a case like this. And Callis is certainly insisting that the investigation is continuing.
Yeah. The final kind of thoughts on this is, I think we, at least in terms of a calendar of events, the most immediate is the amended case that will be presented later this week. What the roadmap is for the civil case and how that moves forward. Obviously, the venue designation is so paramount to that case.
Grant will amend her complaint. The defendants will have a response in court. And ultimately, the judge,
the new judge,
who is now Sarah F. Russell, no longer Jeffrey A. Meyer, it'll be the new federal judge appointed by and nominated by Joe Biden and approved by the Senate recently. Sarah F. Russell presumably will make a decision about whether or not this will go to arbitration months from now, I'm sure.
And also in the background of all of this, and it very much has been in the background pretty much since it was filed, is still the Ringboy lawsuit that Vince McMahon is named in along with Linda McMahon.
Also on hold.
That is on hold. And yes, that is probably not going to have any clarity until next summer, most likely. But that has not been a case. Like, that case has, to me, really not been of any kind of focus since. And it seems like that is going to be, you know, it's something to certainly take note of, because that's very serious as well.
Yes. And so that's on hold pending a decision from the state Supreme Court in Maryland about whether their new law, which is exactly why this is being litigated in Maryland, whether their new law in Maryland, which allows people who accuse others of sexual assault, especially if they're children, they can go back and raise those allegations in civil court, even when it comes to the non-perpetrators that you're claiming were negligent, which is what the former Ring Boys are saying. They are suing WWE, Vince McMahon, Linda McMahon, because they're saying that those parties were negligent in events that led to them allegedly being sexually assaulted by Mel Phillips when they were children in the 80s. And Maryland has established a law that purportedly allows you to go back and sue people, even though it's a very long time ago. So the Supreme Court is, that's a very new law, and the Supreme Court is now listening to some challenges to that law to see if lawsuits like the Ringboy lawsuit are viable. And that'll be decided by the summer.
Everything is better on a boat, and your vacation is no exception. This year, experience the world's most beautiful destinations aboard your own private yacht charter with The Moorings. Our fleet of modern custom-designed yachts is just one reason we were recently voted Best Caribbean Yacht Charter Company by readers of Caribbean Journal. So when you next explore the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, or elsewhere, don't accept anything less than The Moorings. Your vacation time is precious, so make the most of your freedom on the water. Book your perfect charter at moorings.com. Nothing less than The Moorings.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more, going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People vs. GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. We are obviously going to be continuing to cover this, and again, next Wednesday we will see if we have an amended case to go through next week on the show. While I do have you here, Brandon, I'm throwing you a bit of a curveball. Can we talk a little bit about the education that everyone is undergoing about Netflix data? This came out on Thursday. We got a press release from Netflix itself.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes. Do you think that this press release was always coming? Do you think that the Samba TV report led to a press release?
I think
release?
It may have had something to do with it. I think my emails to Netflix PR may have slightly contributed to this actuality.
So, yeah. We had a report that came out from Samba, which is, how would you describe what Samba is? It's like a monitoring service of, because I was not as familiar with Samba before this week.
Saba is an analytics company. I've read their annual reports where they go through things like television viewership and media consumption. They've been interesting. Not so familiar with their actual measurements of telecasts. They came out with a measurement of the Netflix premiere of WWE Raw as having only 664,000 households watching.
Netflix is not viewers. Yeah.
Right. Netflix has now released a press release saying that that is way off. 2.6 million households were watching live same day. Now, and to Netflix's credit, I wrote a big diatribe in advance of this saying, you've got to ask for this kind of data and this kind of data. We want live plus same day. And we don't just want first party data that Netflix measures itself, where it's inclined to measure great numbers, but we want the third party data. And Netflix does have a third party, which is not Nielsen. In most other television networks cases, that is Nielsen, but it is not Nielsen, with the exception of those NFL games. They're working with a firm called VideoAmp, which is also working with CBS Paramount, and just measured the Golden Globes to be 9% higher than what Nielsen measured it as. But anyway, 2.6 million households. Suffice to say, this is a really good number. This is something like double what Raw typically does. Okay. I don't think there's any way. I just want to be very clear. There's no way to spin this as like a disappointment. This was basically, and this is just US. This is very comparable data. Even if it's 9% in excess of what Nielsen would have measured it as, this is still a like the biggest audience probably that watched Raw since like 2016. This is a great audience for them. And we can get into more. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you read Brandon's report on WrestleNomics.com, I mean, you had noted if we take the average viewers per home based on the December numbers and just apply those, which I would imagine for this show, I would imagine the viewers per home were larger, but let's just go with that number for December. That would peg this at about 3.5 million viewers, which is an astounding figure for Raw. The global number was 4.9 million live plus one global views, and they break this down in the Netflix press release that they take the total view hours for the program, then divide it by the runtime, and it has a window of up until 3 a.m. Eastern time.
Yes. So, and
have we lost everyone by now?
We've lost everyone. It's very similar to what Nielsen does. It's probably as similar to what Nielsen does as they could get. Nielsen does something called average minute audience, where they're just giving you an average of every minute across the 2-3 hour program, whatever it is. So I'll put this exclusive chart on the screen here just to demonstrate. This is what in the whole years, what Raw on the USA Network was averaging last year, 2024, it averaged about 1.2 million households, not viewers. And so we have to compare that to the household number, which is all we've got for Netflix, where they're saying 2.6 million households. Even if that's 9% too high, like the Golden Globes were, that's still, I mean, look at the years back if you're watching in video. It's on the level of what Raw was delivering in 2015 with a much stronger USA Network at that time and more households. So this was I think you have to say this was a very successful audience that they delivered for Netflix. I'm sure it'll be down from here, like all of the big debuts are, whether it's SmackDown on Fox, whether it's Dynamite on TNT, whether it's NXT on CW, with the exception of when The Rock is on. Okay. But this is a huge audience for Raw.
Yeah. And the reason, and I assume Brandon, you're thinking was similar here. The reason I was not expecting this press release when it came out is that everyone was going to be focusing on this global number, and you can take 4.9 million global views. The automatic reaction from the media that is going to be most prominently covering this kind of stuff are going to be all the articles that would be making the comparisons to Tyson Paul, the NFL games. That 4.9 million views, even for like I won't call a regular edition of Raw, it was a really pumped up version of Raw. It, like the US number, it's as we just went through, like that, those are the stats. Like this did exponentially higher than an average episode of Raw. And this might be the high point, but the global number, you're just going to get all those comparisons to the recent successes of Netflix live streaming events.
Right. The Netflix, I'm pulling up the press release here for Tyson Paul. They announced that there were 60 million households tuning in live. That's a global number.
Yes.
I didn't expect Netflix to release this, especially given, you know, they released it yesterday morning on a Thursday. I figured this is something that they would release by Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah. But when it didn't come Tuesday, I assumed we were not going to be getting anything. So come Thursday, this really did feel like a correcting the record on Netflix's part and WWE. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's that the probably wrong way off Samba number probably contributed.
All right. Well, there you have it, everybody. That is your breaking news edition of the show. So we do have a pair of super chats here. So let us just see a pair here. Alpha Entertainment still going? Or
Alpha Entertainment filed for bankruptcy when the XFL failed. Yeah. It has since XFL has since been merged into what the UFL along with what was formerly the AFL.
Yes, which which Dwayne Johnson is involved in. And if I understand, the UFL is going onto the Friday Night Fox time slot, I believe.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Look at that.
But I guess what this question is probably thinking is that, well, maybe Vince is going to pick back up Alpha Entertainment. He could certainly start and maybe already has started a new company, but it would not be Alpha Entertainment, which is bankrupt.
And his other question, will we hear about the max numbers with AEW? The fact is we have had two simulcasts so far, and we have had three simulcasts now because Dynamite has now aired twice on Max. There have been no numbers, and I would assume that we are not going to be getting any.
I don't have any data numbers about that. I will continue to ask and see if I can find anything out. Based on the Dynamite number and the Collision number seeming pretty normal before compared to before the Max simulcast, it doesn't seem like there's a huge cannibalization factor. So I would think that the whatever audience is watching on Max is relatively small.
That is going to bring an end to our special breaking news edition of the show. When is the WrestleNomics report going to be dropping, Brandon?
I don't know now.
A tease? Uh-oh.
Sometime tonight. There will be some new information in there, including a lot about the Netflix viewership, a lot about some information about the gate. We've got a new record gate here, merchandise sales and things of that nature. They had a very, very financially successful and economically successful event on Monday night. We've got going to have a review of what's the state of AEW's fan popularity and all the data that we could have that could reflect that, and another long opinion piece about another con, this time about AEW and Tony Khan and its leadership and identity challenges. Oh, that's boy. For everybody on Patreon and Substack who are $5 subscribers.
Where can people go on Substack? What's the best way to find WrestleNomics there?
WrestleNomics.substack.com.
Go bookmark it.
Patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
Yes. A must read, the WrestleNomics report. It is, favorite it, add it to your, reading device and,
all that and a lot more. You're not going to want to miss that whether you just want to understand the business or you want to aggregate the news.
That's it. Also, Wei Ting and I are back tonight. We will be live after SmackDown, which, yes, is 3 hours. We officially start the countdown to June 1st. Cannot wait. But 3 hours SmackDowns. And right now, postwrestlingcafe.com have just dropped the 2025 MMA prediction show. So you can head on over there. Ariel Helwani returning to chat.
And Flair Steamboat.
The year that was. And Flair Steamboat. Want to go back to 1989? Such a quieter time in the wrestling wars when WWF was booking the same building as Wrestle War the night before and keeping people till midnight to see Jake Roberts and Ted DiBiase to burn them out before Flair Steamboat the next day on pay-per-view.
So I'm going to listen as soon as I get a free minute, but have you done all three or four really matches or have you just done Chi-Town Rumble at this point?
Well, we did all four wow. on this show. Okay. Yes. We go through the big three of 89 plus the house show match in Landover, Maryland, yes. Which is an accessible one that came out a bunch of years ago and just
a handheld, as old people call it.
Yes, so check that out. Always good for some live in arena footage, sans commentary. But that is all up postwrestlingcafe.com and go sign up for WrestleNomics on Substack, on Patreon. The WrestleNomics report, it's going to be packed to the gills coming up. And Brandon's opinion pieces, folks, you're missing out, okay, if you're not reading them. That's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in for this special edition of the show. Maybe we'll be back in an hour, but hopefully not. So, goodbye. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.